We are giving away Caps tickets all week long on Grant and Danny. Caller 10 right now at 800-636-1067. You're winning two to see the Capitals Tuesday, January 13th against Montreal. All fans in attendance are going to get a Dylan Strome bobblehead, which is awesome. Honors one of your favorite Capitals on the ice. For the complete cap schedule and tickets, go to thefandc.com/events. Last night when I went into the game, they were passing out Alex Ovechkin floss holders. And the floss comes through the opening of the tooth that he doesn't have.
Oh, how about that?
So that you could tear your floss and it is on your sink in your bathroom.
That's a good idea.
Pretty amazing giveaway.
That's really creative. We're exclusively sponsored by the law firm of Condori and Morad. Estate planning, elder law, real estate transactions, probate administration. Their attorneys are always there to protect you and your family's assets. Schedule a free consultation with their team today by visiting kmlawyers.com and be sure to let them know that we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com.
I should say that I also sat in the Condori and Morad seats last night.
Well, hello there.
Shout out to those gentlemen for allowing me to enjoy a hockey game last night. It is time for the Beltway Blitz. We'll cover the NFL and the Commanders. Let's get it started on the hardwood. We'll talk NBA as well with Keith Smith of SpotTrack, but I wanted to start with these rumors that Trae Young is not only on the trade block, but the Wizards are one of the leaders in a sweepstakes to land him. What do you make of this, Keith? What's going on here in this trade discussion about the sharp shooting guard from Atlanta?
Yeah, I think we've reached the point where the Hawks and Trae Young have taken it as far as they can. With their time together, the signs were out there when the Hawks didn't really entertain extension talks with Young at all. So now we're in a position for Trae Young where they're looking to find a trade. Sounds like the Wizards are interested. They do not have any kind of long-term answer at point guard. Bob Carrington's been a good young player, but I've seen him more as a combo guard type. So I think they're looking at, hey, Trae Young can come. He's a good offensive organizer. He can get guys set up and maybe get our offense moving and improve our guys that way. And if they get paid to do it, so much the better.
Yeah, so I wanted to get into that. Would it be for the actual services of Trae Young, or would it be for that deal, which, you know, isn't expiring? There's a player option. And I guess the second part there, Keith, is what about that player option? Is that something he's likely to pick up?
Yeah, so to the first part of your question is, I think it's both, actually. I think the idea for Washington is, hey, he can help. We don't really have a lot at point guard, and C.J. McCollum rumored to be going the other way if that's how that deal goes down. So he'll slide right in there, but he's a better passer, playmaker. He's much younger than C.J. McCollum, so I think they can help. But they're also going to eat, you know, at least close to $50 million this year, close to $50 million next year. So I think for the Wizards side is, hey, pay us a little bit just in case he does pick up that option. Or if, like, he just walks, we're not just going to eat $50 million, you know, for you this year, even though, you know, even $20 million with the difference between him and McCollum. But I think that's where this is headed. And I think what you're starting to see is Washington's theory, much like, did no surprise, because a lot of them came from the Thunder in that front office, but let's get picks to take a vet in. We'll rehab that vet a little bit and their value, and then we'll get a pick if we trade them on the way out too. And I think that could be what happens here with Trae Young.
They've won 6 of 11. I worry a little bit about adding a piece like him. I mean, they have a top 8 protected pick. Should I be nervous about losing that pick?
I don't think so, because I think, you know, worst comes to worst, if it starts getting in the danger zone, you just all of a sudden some guys come up with back spasms. We used to say flu-like symptoms, but that's scary post-COVID. So somebody just said, oh, his back's bothering him, and all of a sudden guys sit out, and we might you know, let's call it engineering a loss or two along the way.
So Young's been injured a bunch. It's a quad now, yeah. I guess. You know, it's been day-to-day, it seems like, all season long, et cetera. Does that complicate matters at all? Is that something that's not a factor?
I don't think so, because I think there's no sense that anything he's dealing with is anything long-term or chronic. And again, some of this, especially if picks are coming, it's a little bit about eating the contract. So I think the Wizards are just saying, hey, we're still going to be in asset collection mode here a little, and if we can get Trae Young, he can help improve our other guys by making the game a little bit easier on them, so much the better.
Nationally in the NBA, give us a couple storylines to monitor here as we close in on the midway point.
Yeah, I think, you know, one on-the-court thing that's not trade-related is, you know, are the Thunder we thought they were all of a sudden not playing real well? You mentioned the Wizards are 6-5 in their last 11. Well, so are the Thunder. So that is, you know, just kind of an interesting point to look at. This team that looked like they were going to roll to 70-plus wins, now we'll see. Are they just going through a bump in a rough patch? Sure, probably. They're probably fine, but watch that. And then, obviously, trade deadline is less than a month out. We're going to be, you know, focused on that because, you know, is Giannis going to decide he wants out? What's going to happen with Anthony Davis? Is Anthony Davis going to be related somehow in this Trae Young trade where we see maybe that gets worked into a multi-team trade where Davis lands in Atlanta? So a lot of things like that. The league feels pretty wide open. No one is terrified of the Thunder, even though everybody respects them and knows they're really good. But teams think they have a chance. And whenever you have a lot of teams that think they have a chance, teams get a little bit more willing to go for it.
Keith, thank you as always, buddy. Be well.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
You got it, my friend. Hit that NFL sounder. We'll localize this to New England, talking some Patriots with Doug Cott of the Boston Herald. Doug, how real is the criticism that the Patriots haven't played anybody, quote-unquote? We can relate to that. We did that last year, and then we went to the NFC title game. How real is that criticism?
It's pretty real. I mean, they've had a very easy schedule, but they haven't exactly like played down to the schedule. They've really beaten up on some of these bad teams. So I can totally understand the criticism about the bad schedule, but I mean, they beat the Ravens, who I know they didn't make the playoffs, but they're a pretty decent team. They beat the Bills, played close to the Bills and lost the Bills, beat the Bucs, beat the Panthers. Like, they've played the teams that could have given them trouble. That being said, it's been a pretty easy slate of games, and next year's going to be a significant difference for them.
We're going to be diving into various playoff teams every day on the Beltway Blitz over the next couple of weeks. We're starting with the Patriots here and beat reporter Doug Cott of the Boston Herald. By the way, I think I looked at it, and there's five games that had they not have beaten a team, that team would have finished over 500. So this idea that they beat one team over 500, right, okay, fine, but five games go the other way, and the Patriots don't beat them. Now those are all teams that are over 500, two against Miami, Baltimore, and that. There's others. What do you make of and what kind of chances do you give Drake May to win MVP and then also Mike Vrabel to win Coach of the Year?
I feel like, they're both tough because it's both difficult decisions. With Drake May, I would vote for Drake May. I know that some people have already put on Twitter that they've voted for Drake May among the 50 voters. But it also seems like people just want Matthew Stafford to be the MVP this season. And there's certainly, he's a good candidate as well. I mean, he's got the counting stats. Drake May's got the efficiency and advanced stats. So it kind of depends on what you value more. I think that, like, if those things are close and you've got the schedule in favor of Stafford, you've got the supporting cast in favor of Drake May, if it's close, then if you remove one of those players from their team, which team would be worse? I think it's pretty easily the Patriots. Patriots finished it with the number two seed. They finished first in their division. They had more wins than the Rams. So I would give it to May, but it seems like it's going to be pretty tight there. With Vrabel, it's harder to tell because there's still, like, seven or eight deserving candidates this year. A lot of first-year head coaches, Kyle Shanahan, Sean Payton, Mike McDonald. There's just so many good coaches out there who have turned their teams around. Once again, I think Mike Vrabel deserves it, but so do a bunch of other guys. So I think he's probably going to win it, but it's really hard to tell on that one.
Last year, Drake May didn't start the first five games, came in relief in a blowout loss against the Jets. Then it was up and down a lot. You certainly saw signs of some really good things. That's pretty clear and obvious. And here we are talking about him as either the MVP or a guy that's going to finish second in all likelihood. How did that growth happen? How did we get here?
It certainly helps that Josh McDaniels came in and settled the offense. I think they've been a really good team, but I think it's also just the second-year leap that you sometimes see from quarterbacks. Or, you know, in Josh Allen's case, it was the third-year leap from him. We just saw it a little bit earlier from Drake May this year, but the guy had all the tools. He just put them all together, and as much as a better supporting cast like Stephon Diggs coming in helps, as much as having Josh McDaniels or Mike Vrabel coming in, a lot of it is just Drake May's tools. I mean, like, those guys aren't making him a more accurate quarterback. And Drake May's accuracy took a huge leap this year. He was much smarter protecting the football. He was still very good, you know, using his legs as a weapon. So it was a number of different factors, but I give Drake May the most credit for it. Seems like he worked really hard, improved a lot as a leader, but just really seriously improved his game this year.
What do you make of the matchup with the Chargers in round one of the playoffs?
It's a really interesting matchup because the Chargers' weaknesses don't necessarily align with the Patriots' strengths. You know, the Chargers have some offensive line issues, but the Patriots have not been great generating pressure off the edge this season. Harold Landry's hurt right now. Caleb Von Chasen's been a good addition, but he's not exactly like a premier top-tier pass rusher. So I like the Patriots' chances. I think they're going to win. But when you've, as we mentioned before, when you've only played one winning team this season with the Bills, like, would it really be a major surprise if the Patriots didn't win this game? No, but I do believe they're a good team. I think they match up well enough. I don't think the Chargers are a great team, and I'm still waiting to see it from Justin Herbert in the playoffs. I mean, he threw four interceptions the last time he was in the playoffs, so I don't think that he's exactly a proven commodity in the postseason. So give the Patriots a pretty good chance, but seems like it could be a good matchup.
Doug, thank you, buddy. Have a great week.
Absolutely, you too.
Yeah, and here's to an ending that long national nightmare of no Boston championships. It's been almost a year. Let's talk about the Local 53, please. Michael Phillips, Odyssey Richmond, our pal. Miguel, Joe Witt's out, yada, yada, yada. But Cliff Kingsbury's out, too. What do you think?
My goodness, it feels, I'm going to use the word malicious, Danny, right? Because, like, this is a problem that could have solved itself if he had gotten a head coaching job elsewhere. Like, right, if you just lay low for a week, or, you know, when they call for a reference, you're like, oh, yeah, we love working with Cliff. Like, it'd be a real shame if you hired him away. He gets hired as a head coach. You'd be like, ah, oh, we wish him the best, you know, et cetera. But doing it today, it almost costs him the opportunity at those jobs. Like, it's going to be really hard for a team to hire as a head coach a guy who got fired as a coordinator. It feels a little spiteful.
What do you think their issue was with him?
Well, I think that certainly the Jaden shutdown late in the year was the indication that, you know, in retrospect, that Adam Peters or whoever it was did not like the way Jaden was being used and didn't want Cliff to continue to use Jaden in that way, in a way that might put at risk the future of the team. But I also think, man, Jaden's feelings need to be a part of this too, because alienating your star quarterback is rarely a good way to conduct business, unless you've got long-term concerns about him too.
What's a good fit for Daniels, and how is that going to jive maybe with Dan Quinn and Adam Peters' vision of who they want at OC?
Yeah, it's tricky because, like, I think guys should be lining up to work with Jaden Daniels, right? I mean, I think that's a really good job with a great young quarterback. I'm still buying Jaden Daniels stock. I think he's still going to be an excellent NFL quarterback. But it also limits what you can get, right? Like, any name offensive coordinator isn't going to leave an OC job to come to another OC job where there's really no avenue to become head coach. You're like, my guy was Clint Kubiak all along. Like, you know, let's pair him with a great offensive coach, you know, who has a track record of helping quarterbacks succeed. That's not going to happen. He would leave for a head coaching job, not another OC job. So it limits the pool. Certainly you do get the sense that probably Adam Peters and maybe Dan Quinn have a vision in their head of the style of play they want him to play, and I'll be curious to see how that plays out in the search.
They also reportedly fired Bobby Johnson, their offensive line coach, today. What does that tell you?
Well, that was fascinating to me because there was so much praise lavished on Laremy Tunsil there yesterday. He was one of the few guys who got like a name check of praise yesterday. He's a Pro Bowler. We want to get a deal done. You know, it was the opposite of everything that was said. You know, nice things were said about Terry last year, but it never sounded like that. And then the coach in charge of that unit leaves. I'm curious about the whole thing, right? You get the sense they want to remake their style, their identity. I got a lot of follow-up questions. I certainly understand why they didn't want to talk about it yesterday, because you'd rather not answer those questions, but this feels like a full remaking of their identity offensively.
And to that end, I don't love that. Not necessarily the idea to improve the offense, but it's the, you didn't know any of this a couple of years ago? Like, players were drafted. Signings were made. You know what I mean? Like, Cliff Kingsbury is handing Adam Peters a note that says, draft me Josh Connerly. He was involved in the Ben Sinnott consultation. He's involved in Jaden Daniels, presumably. This was built for something else. Whether that works or not is, you know, obviously pretty important here, but that's kind of a head-scratcher, I guess, Michael.
Yeah, and throw the Brian Robinson trade on, you know, on that as well. Obviously, a guy who didn't fit Cliff's system. So certainly it's a fascinating mid-course correction, but also the timing of it. I mean, next year's a referendum year on DQ. Everybody understands that. If he doesn't win next year, you're moving on, and the offensive coordinator probably goes with him unless he has a spectacular season. Jaden is in the fifth-year option pickup after next year, and you're going to start long-term contract negotiations with a guy who got, you know, if you want to believe the reports, blindsided by this news this morning. That feels like not a great start. Like, it feels like maybe, you know, everybody wants to talk about the RG3 comparisons. Let's talk about heading down the Kirk Cousins tracks here, where you just don't feel the love, don't feel like you're part of the team, part of the family, part of the administration. I'm not saying all those things are going to keep Jaden from signing here, but the timing here is very curious to me.
Michael Phillips, the Richmonder, Odyssey in Richmond. Lastly, on Dan Quinn calling his own plays defensively versus going and getting one of the bigger name DCs that are out there, how do you see that playing out?
Well, you know, obviously everybody's going to say Raheem Morris, and I understand why, and they work well together. Right? To me, Dan Quinn's got to produce a really good defense next year. It's got to have his stamp, his imprint on it, because if you're not an offensive guy and you're not the general manager, and if you're entrusting the defense to somebody else, what are you? You're Ron Rivera yelling about culture, right? Like, I think Dan Quinn's got to make a positive contribution to this team next year. I think that comes through defense. I think that's the best place for him to do that.
For Peters here, he made a big deal, it seemed like. The only thing he kind of said, I don't want to say, he was on the record with everything, obviously, but the only thing that he sort of took a stand on yesterday was, hey, anything that has to do with the coaching, that's DQs, right? He made a big point of that distinction when everything else, when they talk about collaboration and we're all of, you know, it's a hive mind, we're basically, you know, the Vecna and the Mind Flayer and everybody else in the Upside Down working together here. But all of a sudden that one was, no, that's Dan's. I'll just support him with whatever he decides. Why? Make that make sense for me.
I will not be able to, Danny. Thank you for thinking that I might be able to, but it didn't make sense to me either. And I think there were a lot of unanswered questions coming out of yesterday. And certainly he's of that football style, playing it close to the vest. But in this interim period where all we have is this news, I think this is the first day where there's been legitimate questions about Adam Peters and his leadership going forward. Look, he could solve all those. He could have a great offseason. I think he's had great acquisitions. I think the Laremy Tunsil trade was good. I think picking up Debo was a good pickup. I mean, Javon Kinlaw was an unquestioned upgrade. Like, I think he's good at his job. But there were a lot of questions, and I don't feel like we got a lot of answers, Danny.
Michael, thank you, buddy. Good catching up.
Thanks, bud.
Hey, take care.
Take care of yourself. There's Michael Phillips. That is your Beltway Blitz on G&D. Who do you think was the bigger reason for Cliff being out from a relationship standpoint in that building? Do you think this was more about his relationship with Peters or Quinn? Was this an AP call or a DQ call? 800-636-1067 is the number. That's next on Grant and Danny.